Welcome. This is the Anxiety Summit Season 2. I'm your host, Trudy Scott. I'm known as a food mood expert. I'm also a certified nutritionist and author of the Anti-Anxiety Food Solution. Today, we are talking to the king of GMO advocacy, Jeffrey Smith, and the topic is anxiety and mood, health risks of GMOs and Roundup. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Really great to have you here. I actually grew up in South Africa, and on a trip back there, I think it was 2005, was the first time I heard you do a presentation actually at the University of Natal in Durban. And it was an amazingly eye-opening presentation on GMOs, very new information for a lot of South Africans. And it was a powerful wake-up call for me and every person in the audience. And it's the same time every time I hear you present. I remember you were in Sacramento about a year and a half ago, and it was fantastic to hear you again. And I applaud you for being a man on a mission, because you really are. And I'm thrilled to be bringing you here today, because we need to do something about GMOs. And you, the person who's going, you know, who's making, you know, doing so much to help facilitate change and awareness. So I'm thrilled to have you here on the Anxiety Summit to share this information. And I'm excited because we're going to talk about a few different things, things that are related specifically to anxiety and depression. And one of them is the GMO tryptophan scare. So stay tuned and enjoy the rest of the interview. I'm going to just read your bio and then we'll get started, Jeffrey. So Jeffrey Smith is an international best-selling author and filmmaker, executive director of the Institute of Responsible Technology, and leading spokesperson on the health dangers of GMOs. He is the leading consumer advocate promoting healthier non-GMO sources. Mr. Smith's documentary, Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, was awarded the 2012 Movie of the Year, Solari Report, and the Transformational Film of the Year by AwareGuard. His books include Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating, and Genetic Roulette, The Documented Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods. You can learn more at www.responsibletechnology.org and www.seedsofdeception.com. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. And let's get started with the interview, Anxiety and Mood, Health Risks of GMOs and Roundup. And I think the best place to start is with this question. What exactly is a GMO? And this is for people who may not know what a GMO is, because we can't assume that everybody does know this. And why do we need to be concerned?
Well, GMO means genetically modified organism. And there are organisms made not through sexual reproduction, which could include hybridization and selective breeding, but through laboratory transfers of genes, often unrelated to the species. So, for example, soybeans in the United States, over 90% of them, are inserted with a gene from bacteria that allows the soybean plant to receive sprays of an herbicide called Roundup that would normally kill the plant. But because the inserted gene produces a particular protein that allows the crop to survive the doses of normally deadly Roundup. So Roundup-ready soybeans are genetically engineered, as are corn that is Roundup, Roundup-ready cotton, canola, sugar beets, and alfalfa. And herbicide tolerance is the number one reason they alter these genes artificially. The other major genetically engineered variety comes with corn and cotton plants only, and they are engineered to produce a toxin that's actually an insecticide that breaks open the stomach of insects to kill them. So on the one hand, you have products that are sprayed with herbicide, and the herbicide is absorbed into the crops that we eat. On the other hand, you have crops that produce their own toxic insecticide, which of course we eat as well. In addition to the obvious dangers of these two toxins, the very process of genetic engineering causes massive collateral damage in the DNA. So Monsanto, which is the largest GMO maker, they have a corn that makes an insecticide, but it also produces a new allergen because the process of genetic engineering accidentally switched on a gene that's normally silent And so now people may get allergic reactions to the corn, even though there's no labels warning them against the corn. Their soy has an elevated level of a known soy allergen, again, because of the collateral damage that occurs due to the process of this high-risk, side-effect-prone technology.
And the big issue is that these foods have been genetically modified, and we don't know about it. It's not on the labels, and that's the really big issue, that we don't have a choice in making choices with some of these foods, correct?
Well, it is one of the big issues. I would say labeling is one of the big issues. But in the research that I've done on GMOs for the last 18 years, I think a bigger issue is that it should not be on the market at all. It should never have been approved. In fact, the scientists at the FDA had repeatedly warned their superiors to require long-term testing, saying that the foods made from genetic engineering could easily produce allergens or toxins, create new diseases, create nutritional problems. It would be very, very difficult to evaluate, and we needed to do those long-term testing, including human testing, before any GMO was put on the market. Now, all of the scientists that were commenting on the GMO situation had this consensus, but the political appointee put in charge of GMO policy was Michael Taylor. Michael Taylor was Monsanto's attorney turned FDA policy chief, and the policy that he released claimed falsely that the agency wasn't aware of any information showing that GMOs were different, therefore no testing or labeling was necessary. Taylor then went on to become Monsanto's vice president. Now he's back at the FDA as the U.S. food czar. So I would say the bigger issue is that GMOs should never have been approved, and now that we have evidence compiled based on scientific research and clinical experience, it's even more clear that the warnings of the scientists of the FDA were valid and they have been vindicated. So I would argue that while labeling is important and I am for labeling, I think the science justifies a complete ban. And I'm not alone in that opinion. The American Academy of Environmental Medicine reviewed the animal feeding studies in 2009 and saw that the animals that were force-fed the GMOs had gastrointestinal problems, immune problems, reproductive disorders, accelerated aging, organ damage, dysfunctional regulation of cholesterol and insulin, and they said there should be a moratorium and that all doctors in the meantime should prescribe non-GMO diets to their patients.
Great. I like that they're saying that. So then why, Jeffrey, is there, you'll see all these attempts to say, let's label. Why are we, is that the first step that we want to do? And then we're going to say we want to ban it outright? Or why are we doing this sort of two-step process then? Or are we doing that?
Well, labeling is one way that states, for example, can exert their authority. States don't have the authority to ban GMOs. And so the issue is that if we have to do what we can. I mean, the current administration and the previous administrations have been marching lockstep with Monsanto and the biotech industry, and this is well documented. It was the White House under the first Bush administration that told the FDA to promote GMOs, which prompted them to create a position specifically for Michael Taylor. The head of the USDA is a very big pro-biotech guy, Tom Vilsack, who won Biotech Governor of the Year in Iowa in 2001. The head of U.S. Agency for International Development is or was a big biotech guy, same as the guy who was in charge of U.S. agricultural trade. He was the biotech lobbyist. So we have a situation where the current administration, as well as the State Department, which is basically deployed as the enforcement wing for the biotech industry, bullying other countries to try and force them to accept these crops so that they can solve our problems that we ended up creating GM crops that no one wants. So that leaves us with, from a political standpoint, little option in terms of banning it nationally, but it provides us with an option for labeling it, which is what the legislature of Vermont did recently, putting in required labeling, and they were immediately sued by Monsanto and the grocery manufacturers. Oregon and Colorado have a ballot initiative for this fall for labeling, mandatory labeling, and there is a ground war going on right now on the television where the biotech industry is spending a fortune lying to the voters, falsely claiming that labels will increase costs of food, even though in 64 of the countries that do require labeling, no increase in costs actually occurred. So it's a very high-profile battle, which is why a lot of people become aware of GMOs for the very first time when they realize that they're not labeled and that there's a fight for labeling.
Right, and it's great what's happened in Vermont, and I'm pleased that it's on the initiative in Oregon and Colorado, and I remember it was on the ballot here in California, and we failed, and we were absolutely amazed because there was so much support for the labeling, and then the big guys came in, and they spent a ton of money on ads and changing people's minds. So that was very, very unfortunate. So going back to the labeling then, so you're saying that if they're labeled, people are going to know about it. They will hopefully make an educated, smart choice, not buy those products, and then ultimately the industry is going to change. Is that what we're aiming for then?
Well, that certainly could be a result of labeling. And since 40% of Americans are already saying that they're seeking to avoid or reduce their GMO intake, then labels on GMOs would certainly drive down market share. In fact, 53 to 56% of Americans have said that if GMOs were labeled, they would avoid them. So this is to protect the fortunes of the biotech industry by keeping Americans in the dark. So that is why the grocery manufacturers and the biotech industry are paying for these disinformation campaigns and lying to voters about the impact of labeling.
Right. And, you know, it's so interesting. I'm from South Africa, and I was recently there in the summer, and I was amazed because in South Africa, labeling is in place. So you'll pick up something, and it'll say this contains GMO corn. It's actually it's called mealies in South Africa. That's the term that we use for corn. And yet people are buying it and eating it. So I think the fact that there's been so much going on here in the U.S. for so long and there's so much more awareness and there's, you know, all these campaigns and it's been on a ballot, then it has failed and it's in the media and it's on blogs and it's in social media, is raised a lot more awareness than somewhere in South Africa where it just slipped under the radar and it got labeled and no one really knows about it and they don't realize the dangers.
Well, more and more awareness is coming to South Africa. Nestle's just announced that it's taking the GMOs out of its baby food in that country, but not, of course, in the United States. There's also a section on South Africa in my film, Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, which is really an amazing story. I was talking to a veterinarian from the Midwest we're talking about GMOs. I was interviewing him for a film, and he told me about a client he had from South Africa who had all sorts of health problems with his pigs and cows. The milk production was low. The reproductive rate was low. There was a lot of disease, and the veterinarian gave him a whole long list of things to do. And the guy said, look, can you just tell me one thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
He said, don't plant GMOs. Don't feed your animals another GMO. So what he did is he took a part of his property and took it from GM corn to non-GM corn and started feeding it to the animals. Well, within a short time, the health problems of the animals disappeared, and they ended up being healthy as the other animals on other places. And he was very, very impressed. The milk production went up. He was making more money. I spoke to him, total enthusiasm about the increased health benefits and the reduction in medical use and whatnot. So it basically could have saved his farm. However, he ran out of his non-GMO corn and then started buying corn from the market, which was largely GMO, and all the health problems came back. And then he switched to non-GMO because he planted enough acreage to handle a year's worth of planting until the next harvest. Now, what was more tragic than that was what happened to the workers. As you know, in South Africa, much of the population eats this corn, these mealies,
yes,
three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's the staple. It's like in Asia, rice is often the staple. In South Africa, for many, corn is the staple. Now, they had he needed 50 workers on the farm, but he actually hired 60, 20% more, because the workers were so sick. He said there was inflammatory problems, severe headaches, flu-like symptoms, and he was spending a fortune on products in the medicine cabinet. Well, the workers were eating the corn that was grown on the farm, and the corn that was grown on the farm initially was 100% GMO. So they were eating more GMOs than perhaps anyone on the planet. Now, I remember talking to a former Monsanto scientist who said when they fed genetically modified corn to rats for 90 days, the rats got serious health problems, but instead of withdrawing the corn, the scientists rewrote the study to hide the effects. Not only was he appalled about that, but he realized that the people in South Africa eat a lot more corn in their diet than the rats that Monsanto fed. Usually Monsanto only has a maximum of 33% of the diet as a genetically engineered corn, and in Africa it could be 70% of the caloric intake, or even more in times of famine. So he was very concerned about feeding the corn from Monsanto, his former company, into South Africa. And here there was 60 people were getting so sick, and the veterinarian told me that he was told by the farmer that once or twice a month he would be speaking to one of his farm workers, and he would notice that the eyes were no longer tracking together, that one would move in one direction and the other would move in another direction, and within 1 to 2 days that worker would die. So there was a huge death rate, a huge sickness rate, and then it all changed. When he had switched the corn to non-GM corn and started feeding the animals, not only did the animals get better, but the workers got better. They all the symptoms disappeared until he ran out of the non-GM corn, had to buy corn from the marketplace. The symptoms returned until he was able to secure non-GM corn on a permanent basis. So this was a situation where, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the analogy, the canary in the coal mine.
Hey, yes.
Coal miners, yeah, the coal miners used to keep canaries in the coal mine because if there was any dangerous toxic gases, the canaries would die instantly. And if they saw in the dead canary, they'd rush out of the coal mine before they got affected. Well, people in the South African farm were eating more corn per day than people in other parts of the world, but because they were on the farm, they weren't eating the mixed corn between GM and non-GM initially. They were eating 100% GM corn as their diet and 3 times a day. So they were actually the canaries in the coal mine, so to speak, for the rest of us. It's a tragic story and one that really, I hope, becomes popular in South Africa.
Wonderful, wonderful ending. Gee, that is just so fantastic. And as you say, because they were consuming so much, they had such bad effects. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that if you're consuming small amounts, if you're eating processed foods and you're getting a little bit of soy here and there and you're getting a little bit of corn, you may be eating lesser of amounts, so you're not going to see that those very profound effects. But what's going to happen is you're going to have these issues that start to creep up on you. We're seeing an increase in food allergies. We're seeing an increase in gluten sensitivity. So those are the types of things that we're seeing when we're not consuming huge amounts of the GM food. What sort of other health problems are we seeing?
That's an excellent question. And by the way, the average American does consume about 170 pounds of GMOs a year. But a lot of it is processed in high fructose corn syrup and sugar, beet sugar, and things like that. What we see in terms of people reporting what gets better when they switch to a non-GMO diet is very tightly correlated with what we saw with animals that were fed GMOs, as reported by the American Academy of Environmental Medicine 5 years ago. I actually interview people in events where I speak, and I've asked people in about 100 events to raise their hand if they notice an improvement in their health since switching to a non-GMO diet, and they know how they switch to organic or buy more whole foods, and I'll explain why, how to tell what the cause is, whether it's GMO or the other problems, in a moment. But it is now completely predictable that the largest percentage of people who notice the change report that the improvement was gastrointestinal. And that could range from irritable bowel, Crohn's disease, inflammatory bowel, acid reflux, etc. Then you have the next level is those that have showed an increase in energy and a reduction in brain fog, very, very high percentage. Then you have weight gain, immune system problems, headaches, and skin inflammation or skin rashes, very, very common. And then you have a whole host of other disorders and diseases from cancer and diabetes, autistic symptoms, aggression, depression, ADHD, restless leg syndrome, liver problems, kidney failure. All of these things have been described by audience members. Now, these are many of the problems that you see in the animal feeding studies, but that's not the only link. When livestock are taken off of GMOs, as we just described, it's just a matter of switching the GM corn or soy to non-GM corn or soy. There's none of the potential cofactors that happen with humans when they buy organic or switch to more unprocessed foods to avoid the GMOs. And the animals get better from the same thing. I was recently speaking in Beijing with a delegation of 30 scientists and other experts on GMOs, and there were farmers and veterinarians describing the experience of livestock and how they got improved with gastrointestinal problems, with immune problems, had reduced need for antibiotics and medicines, had lower birth defects. And these were correlated with the improvements in humans, and they were also correlated with the increased trends of disorders and diseases that have been on the rise, growing in parallel with the increased use of GMOs in the U.S., as well as the increased use of Roundup herbicide, which is soaked into and absorbed into most of the GMO crops on the market. And so we have this parallel support system where we have the lab animals, the livestock, even pets, cats and dogs, humans, and the bigger epidemiological correlations between the diseases. And the diseases that are correlated include deaths from stroke, senile dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and obesity. We have diabetes, autism, inflammatory bowel, irritable bowel, chronic constipation. We have a variety of cancers like liver, kidney, urinary, bladder, bile duct, and thyroid. And we have a number of other problems correlated tightly with the increased use of GMOs and Roundup in the U.S. And if you look at the two main toxins that we described, the Roundup that are in the crops and also the BT toxin, which we can explain, they also relate to anxiety and depression, particularly the Roundup, that could easily explain the variety of diseases. And that puts a lot of points in one perspective that's strong enough by itself to convince most people and most doctors who hear it to either avoid GMOs themselves or, in the case of the doctors and nutritionists, to prescribe non-GMO diets to their clients and patients.
Fantastic. And I always tell my clients about GMOs and they need to get off the GMO foods. And it's really great that nutritionists and doctors are doing this. And I wanted to just share my story because I was a vegetarian at one time before I was a nutritionist, and I was eating a lot of soy, and it wasn't organic soy. And once I woke up to the fact that I should not be eating a vegetarian diet, that was one aspect of it. The other aspect was getting off the soy. I saw such a huge improvement in my, gut issues, of course, my mood issues, energy, brain fog, you name it. This is when I was in my late 30s and had terrible, terrible anxiety and panic attacks. And I truly believe that the soy and the fact that it was genetically modified had a huge impact on my health. So I saw it firsthand, and it's very, very powerful. And I'd love to come and, go into talking a little bit more about panic and anxiety and the direct correlation. But I wanted to go back to a comment you made about the average American consumes 170 pounds of GMs a year, mostly high fructose corn syrup. Would you happen to know how
I would say including high fructose corn syrup. You see, I wouldn't say mostly.
If
corn and soy are the primary, and then you have sugar from sugar beets, you have cottonseed oil and canola oil, there's some papaya from Hawaii or China, and some zucchini and yellow squash. And then there's another category, which would be a larger dose of GMOs if we counted it, and that is the animal products from animals that are fed GMOs. And so you have most of the meat and dairy and eggs and it basically come from animals that have been fed GMOs as the primary food in their diet.
Because they're fed corn and soy instead of eating bugs or eating grass, which is what they're supposed to do. So we're getting it by that route.
And they're also eating sugar beet pulp and cotton seed and canola meal and alfalfa, all of which have been genetically engineered.
Okay, got it. Okay, so going back to my question, thank you for clarifying that, about the average American consuming 170 pounds of GM ingredients a year. Have you got any idea how that compares with the amount that these South African workers were consuming? I'm just trying to figure out if it's half as much or a third as much or a quarter as much as they were consuming.
Although I don't know that number, there is an understanding that the more you process GMOs, the less concern, the less risk there is for the GMO-related toxins. So, for example, we know from a 2004 study that part of the gene inserted into soybeans transferred into the DNA of bacteria living inside our intestines. And it's also possible that once transferred, it might continue to function, producing the genetically engineered protein 24/7 inside of us. Now, that could be quite dangerous, and I'll explain in a few minutes why it could be very, very serious and why it might already be happening and could explain some of the problems that we're seeing. But if you have corn oil or soybean oil from genetically engineered crops, the oil doesn't have any DNA or very little. And so it also doesn't have any protein or very little. So the risk of gene transfer is extremely small when you deal with these processed foods. High fructose corn syrup has no DNA. Dextrose, maltodextrin from corn does not have any DNA. So the risk is greater for corn if you eat genetically engineered corn on the cob,
right,
which has the BT toxin from, as well as it's Roundup Ready from Monsanto, so it's sprayed with Roundup, so you're getting a full dose, you have the complete intact proteins, the complete intact DNA, and that could be a catastrophe.
Okay, got it. And these South Africans were eating, they take the corn off the cob and they grind it into like a, they call it pup, mealy pup, and that's how they eat it. So they were getting real food in the form of corn, so they were getting a much, much more damaging dose.
Yes.
Okay, got it. Okay. It'll be interesting to find out how still the volume that it, you know, compares with, but that's very helpful to hear that. So let's go on to anxiety and depression and mood problems, because you listed it as one of the issues. And we do know that there's this very strong correlation between the gut and anxiety and depression. So we see a very high correlation of people going into the doctor for IBS. Or ulcerative colitis and digestive problems, also having anxiety and depression. So, you know, there's obviously this roundabout way that it's affecting mood, because it's affecting the gut. We make so much serotonin in the gut, it probably affects our gut bacteria. Can you talk a little bit about that, and then also some of the other impacts that we know Roundup has on some of the pathways that help us make serotonin?
Yes, excellent. Let's start with general gastrointestinal health because of that gut-brain axis. BT toxin breaks open little holes in the walls of insects to kill them. And it turns out, according to a 2012 study, it also pokes holes in human cells. So if we're eating corn chips or polenta or corn on the cob that produces BT toxin, it might cause a lot of hole poking and irritation and inflammation and whatever along the entire digestive tract. It also has been found, BT toxin, to damage the microvilli, which are the fingers extending from the walls of the intestines that do the absorption of the food. So if we have a hole-poking toxin that runs through our digestive tract, it could explain, that alone could explain the irritable bowel, the inflammation, etc. But it gets worse. because it's poking holes in the walls of the intestines, those walls are only one cell thick. When it pokes holes in the walls of the insects, it actually allows things to go from the stomach or the gut of the insect into other areas of the insect where the beneficial bacteria can turn toxic when it goes into these other areas. So by creating these holes in the walls, if it does that for humans, then it's called permeable gut. Some call it leaky gut. Now, with leaky gut, that is correlated with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. So you have the mental correlation. It's correlated with autism. It's correlated with cancer. It's correlated with food allergies, inflammation, as well as autoimmune disease. And autoimmune disease is explained in that you have now undigested proteins that are normally stick around in the intestines until they're broken down more, but they jump through these little holes into the bloodstream, and the immune system attacks these undigested food proteins, assuming that they are themselves invaders and attackers. And as we know, the immune system components all take out their iPhone and they take pictures of these attackers and they put it on their Facebook page and say, these are the attackers, everyone should now attack anything that looks like this. But because it's a fuzzy picture, something called molecular mimicry, the immune system starts to attack things that look like that photo. So they start attacking the thyroid or the microvilli in the gut or the pancreas, and that turns out to be autoimmune disease, where the immune system attacks the body thinking that it's something else. And so that is highly correlated with leaky gut. And the whole cascade of inflammation could relate to our mood and behavior, etc. So that's just the BT toxin. But before we get off the BT toxin, I want to add two things. In Canada, they found the BT toxin in the blood of 93% of the pregnant women tested. Now, if it gets into the blood, it may be toxic to our blood cells, as it was found in a mouse study where it was damaging to the red blood cells. But it was also in 80% of the unborn fetuses of these pregnant women. And if it gets into the unborn fetus, there's no blood-brain barrier, so it might get into the brains. And so if you have a hole-poking toxin in the brains of the fetus of this generation in North America, that might affect mood, behavior, cognitive function, etc. Now, just the second point is that the BT toxin should wash out of the blood fairly quickly, but why would 93% of the pregnant women tested in Canada have it? Because it's not Mexico where they eat corn tortillas every day. There had to be some regular source of corn to explain this high level of BT toxin. So the people who were doing the study speculated that they were getting the toxin by eating the milk and meat of animals that were fed the BT corn all their lives. I think a more plausible study, plausible explanation, is that the gene that produced the BT toxin transferred into the DNA of the gut bacteria and continued to function. And so that means that it converts our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories, and that could be why 93% of the pregnant women tested had it in their blood, because they're producing it inside their gut. If they're producing it inside their gut, it could be causing a lot of inflammation and whatnot. It also can provoke immune responses and create more sensitivity to formerly harmless foods, according to studies on mice. So just the BT toxin alone and its potential capacity to transfer in terms of the gene to our gut bacteria is a serious issue. But Roundup is a major competitor with the BT toxin to explain all of these problems. Roundup is a antibiotic that kills the beneficial gut bacteria, not the E. coli, salmonella, and botulism, not the nasty stuff. So it can potentially cause a buildup and an overgrowth of the negative gut bacteria, which produces gases which can cause irritation throughout the digestive tract. And it also produces zonulin, which is known to break open the gaps between the cells on the walls of the intestines, another form of leaky gut. So all the problems we discussed with leaky gut can be attributed also to the properties of Roundup. In addition, Roundup suppresses the digestive enzymes, and it damages the microvilli. So other ways that it creates problems, and genetically engineered Roundup Ready soy has also been shown to suppress digestive enzymes. Now, in addition to that, Roundup also blocks certain metabolic pathways. One pathway that it blocks creates these enzymes called CYP enzymes that are used by the liver to detoxify all of the toxins that we're exposed to. And so if we are messing up the production of these CYP enzymes, then we may also be causing all these other toxins to be much more dangerous. And the CYP enzymes are also related to things like glutathione, which is important for the brain, and vitamin D, et cetera. So there's a whole cascade of other brain and mood-related things based on these CYP enzymes. However, what I wanted to talk about, which you mentioned, is the other pathway that Roundup shuts down. And this pathway is called the shikimate pathway. And Monsanto bragged up and down that because Roundup blocks the shikimate pathway in order to kill weeds, and because humans don't have the shikimate pathway, Roundup must be safe for humans. But it's not safe for a lot of reasons. It's an antibiotic. It's an endocrine disruptor. It can promote cancer. It's linked to heart disease and cancer and diabetes, all these different things. But what they failed to point out was that the shikimate pathway is what our gut bacteria use, not our bodies, but the bacteria living inside our bodies. They use the shikimate pathway to produce the vast majority of the L-tryptophan that we assimilate. L-tryptophan is a precursor to melatonin, which is linked to sleep and circadian rhythms, daily cycles, but it's also a precursor to serotonin. And now we land squarely on the world of anxiety. Without sufficient serotonin, there can be anxiety, depression, etc. It also is linked, serotonin is a regulator for insulin, so there could be problems with diabetes potentially. It also tells the body, I'm full, I can stop eating now. So without enough serotonin, we might favor obesity. So the fact that most of the tryptophan in the body that's assimilated is produced by the gut bacteria, and that the gut bacteria are exposed to Roundup by eating Roundup Ready crops, and you'll hear in a minute, not just Roundup Ready crops, but some other crops that are sprayed with Roundup before harvest, we may be promoting the reduction of L-tryptophan and the reduction of serotonin, which might have mood and behavior issues. Now, I have talked to many people about mood and behavior related to GMOs, and it's a very large category where people, when they stop eating GMOs, anxiety, depression, etc., tend to go away or reduce on a regular basis. Now, basically, I'm asking people that already said that they're improving their health when they switch to non-GMO diets, there's obviously people that are depressed and anxious for other reasons that are not related to diet or not related to consumption of GMOs. But I do know of many, many people who say that when they switch to a non-GMO diet, their behavior improved. And an interesting corollary to this is that when I speak to veterinarians and to farmers who take pigs and cows off of GMOs, and I interview them independently, so they haven't heard what their other colleagues have said in other parts of the country, other parts of the world, they always use the same word when they describe one of the benefits of switching to the non-GMO diet, when they talk about their animals, and that is happier. They talk about on GMOs, some are irritated, antisocial, upset, and they get happier on a non-GMO diet, which I found very heartwarming.
That's lovely. Oh, I love it. Thank you for sharing that. So this is powerful. So what we've got is the BT toxin that's damaging the gut. It's promoting leaky gut. It's getting into the brain of these newborns. We've got it. We're thinking it's coming from the maybe the milk and the meat that they're eating, or maybe you're saying that we've got this little factory going on in the gut. That's just really, really scary. And then on top of that, we've got the Roundup that's killing the good bacteria. It's creating these leaky gut situation because of the increase in the zonulin. It's reducing our enzymes, so we can't absorb the beautiful food that we're eating, and the microvilli is damaged. And then it's blocking these enzymes that we need to detox from all the other, you know, environmental toxins that we're exposed to. And then it has a direct impact on the Shikimate pathway, which I think is fascinating because we know how much serotonin we produce in the gut. You know, we always think that it's in the brain, but so much is in the gut. So this all really goes back to the gut in many, many ways. And I'd love you to just clarify. So someone's listening to this and they're resonating with this. And we've talked about the BT toxin and we've talked about Roundup. Can you just clarify again which foods have which of these? Because we've talked about soy and corn and beets and some of the other foods. Which just clarify again where we're seeing each of these.
Great, and it was an excellent summary, Trudy. I want to add one thing.
Yes.
That I point out a lot of evidence that would lead one to believe that genes transfer from BT corn, for example, because it transfers from the soy. That the BT pokes holes in human cells in a test tube, so it probably pokes holes in human cells in real life. But I'm going to just say, most of those things that you described, there's a very, very high probability that those are going on. I can't say that it's definite because the research has been suppressed. When scientists discover problems with GMOs, they're often attacked, fired, gagged, stripped of responsibilities, denied tenure, denied funding, and there's been a huge suppression and scare tactics to keep researchers from doing research. In fact, they have difficulty even getting the seeds because they're patented and they can't just buy them and do research because that would break the patent rules. So we don't have the large body of research that I could say this is proven, and that's by design from the biotech industry who've been very effective at suppressing the research. But I would say that they're, given what we're seeing when people stop eating GMOs along with the animals and whatnot, then I have high confidence that these are the problems we're seeing. Now, in order to avoid GMOs, here's what you need to do. The easiest thing is to go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com. There we have over 22,000 products that are verified as non-GMO by the Non-GMO Project. Sometimes you can go right out in the store and find non-GMO labels. That's another way to do it. The Non-GMO Project label is the best. You can buy products that say organic, and if they have the Non-GMO Project label as well, that's even better, but not organic are not allowed to intentionally use GMOs. And if it doesn't say non-GMO, and it doesn't say organic, and it's not listed in our shopping guide, you can find in the shopping guide the list of the at-risk ingredients. Now, there's 9 food crops, and we mentioned them, and I'll say them again: soy, corn, cotton, free cottonseed oil, canola, sugar beets, which is only the sugar beets used for sugar, not for table beets, alfalfa, which is used as hay for animals, papaya from Hawaii or China, some zucchini and yellow squash. Aspartame is a sweetener that is also from genetically engineered bacteria, and there's a lot of derivatives of soy and corn that most people don't even know the names of. Those are listed in the shopping guide, along with some of the products that you wouldn't guess might have these derivatives added to it. So that's the fourth way. If you don't have a label that says organic or non-GMO, avoid the at-risk ingredients. And if something is packaged and processed, then there's a much higher likelihood that it's going to contain a derivative of soy and corn or cottonseed oil or canola oil or certainly sugar from sugar beets. Now, in addition, to avoid Roundup, Roundup is sprayed on 6 of those 9 crops. So it's in higher concentrations in the oils and the soybean oil and the canola oil and whatnot. But it's also sprayed now as a ripening agent on a lot of other crops: wheat, barley, rice, potatoes, sweet potatoes, citrus groves, berries. We don't know how much is sprayed. We don't know how many of these crops are sprayed as a ripening agent. But the EPA just approved dramatically the allowable levels of Roundup on 160 varieties of fruits, vegetables, grains, and beans because it's being used as a ripening agent. And the levels that are approved in some of these crops are as much as a million times higher than levels that have been promoting, for example, replication of breast cancer cells. And we think it's an absolute outrage. Now, because we don't know, the safest way to avoid Roundup is to buy organic. And that way, organic does not allow the spraying of Roundup, and you get to not only avoid the Roundup, you also avoid the GMOs, you avoid the other chemicals like atrazine, and so you also end up with higher antioxidants and other healthy, you know, aspects of the food, which has been found consistently in the better studies that have been done on organic. And so buying organic and trying it out for example, for a month, should, in many cases, demonstrate improvements in health, mood, and behavior, especially if Roundup or these other products from the foods are the cause or contributing to these issues.
Fantastic. And I knew about Roundup being sprayed on wheat and sugarcane. It's actually, we interviewed Dr. Stephanie Seneff in the season one of the Anxiety Summit, and she shared how it's sprayed on the wheat and then the sugarcane. And I questioned, I said, do you know if it's sprayed on the sugarcane in South Africa? Because I grew up surrounded by sugarcane fields. And after the interview, I found out that it is very heavily sprayed. But I wasn't aware that it was sprayed on citrus groves and berries as a ripening agent. That's just quite horrific.
Yeah, it is a problem. It's a huge, huge problem. And I would say people are just now waking up to the dangers of mm-hmm. Roundup and its active ingredient glyphosate. Stephanie and her co-author Anthony Samsel describe glyphosate as probably the most chronically toxic chemical on the planet because of how widely it's used and how devastating it can be over time for all these different disorders that they've identified.
Mm-hmm. And they've identified some very bad kidney issues. I think it's in Sri Lanka, and they've actually banned it in Sri Lanka, haven't they?
Well, they tried, but there was a lot of pushback and pressure, so it became kind of a partial ban or a restriction. Yeah, what happened is in these areas where it's used in plantations, Central America, Sri Lanka, et cetera, and including sugarcane places, sugarcane plantations, the kidney failure rate is horrendous. There's one area where among a certain population of men, 25% of the men have kidney disease, which is deadly because there's a shutting down of the kidneys. And in Sri Lanka, they did research and found that it is probably Roundup that's the culprit. And here's what they said. The reason why Roundup is so dangerous and does all these nasty things is that it chelates all these different minerals, including trace minerals. By chelating, I mean it grabs them and doesn't let them go. It makes them unavailable. And these trace minerals are absolutely essential for the shikimate pathway, for the CYP enzyme pathway. There's 271 different enzymes that are suppressed or made, you know, that are affected or impacted by Roundup, and it can block manganese, which is so important, and cobalt, which is related to B12, and all these different things which are so critically important. And these scientists suggested that it grabbed arsenic, and arsenic is usually stopped in the liver and detoxified. But when it was bound with glyphosate, it got through the liver, circulated through the body, ended up in the kidneys, and the acidic environment in the kidneys broke apart the bond, and now you have two active toxins in the kidneys that kill the kidney. You have the glyphosate and the arsenic. So that was the theory put forth in this very important article recently, which might explain this huge death rate and sickness rate in the workers in these plantations that use Roundup.
Wow. What are we doing in this world? It's quite crazy. It really is.
I hope that our talk has not created any more anxiety. So I have to give the good news at the end.
Okay.
I have to, see, if we stop now, kind of depressing, isn't it?
It is. Have you got the good news now? Because I've got one other question I want to ask you.
All right, you can ask one more question in the section that I call Death, Disease, Destruction, and Despair. Then we're going to hold hands, jump through the hoop, and come out the other side with some good news.
Okay, great.
What's the last question?
So this is directly related to anxiety and depression and serotonin. And I just wanted you to talk briefly to the whole issue that we had with tryptophan being banned and the fact that it was made from from genetically engineered bacteria. And in 1989, there was this huge outbreak of EMS, and it was banned for a long time, and then it's now available back on the market. And again, tryptophan, I use it in my practice extensively. It's an individual amino acid that, taken away from protein-containing foods, can help to raise serotonin levels. It's a precursor for making serotonin, so it'll help with the worry in your head, the ruminating thoughts. You mentioned the issues with insulin and appetite. It can help with cravings, afternoon and evening cravings. It helps with depression and irritability and PMS and a whole host of other issues while you're figuring out the digestive issues and why you're figuring out, you know, what sort of diet you need to be eating. But I'd love you to just talk a little bit about it, because it got a really bad reputation because of this, and any light that you can shed on it or any insights would be great.
Sure. There was a company in Japan called Showa Denko, a chemical company, and they were a producer of tryptophan. And in the 1980s, starting in the mid-80s and continuing up to 1989 and 1990, they were producing L-tryptophan from genetically engineered bacteria. And they were adding more and more genes over five different strains over this 4 or 5 year period. And they did not know it, but these contaminants were being created in the L-tryptophan, almost certainly due to the process of genetic engineering and the collateral damage that occurs in the surprise side effects. So there were very tiny amounts of contaminants. In fact, the tryptophan continued to pass the U.S. pharmaceutical or pharmacological purity standard of 98.5% pure. But these contaminants were 0.1%, even 0.01%, and somehow they were deadly. Individually or in combination, no one had figured it out, but it was found that they ultimately killed about 100 Americans and caused about 5 to 10,000 to not only fall sick, but many became permanently disabled. And the pain that these people felt and experienced was the worst that the doctors had ever seen in their entire careers very often. And the paralysis was progressive, where it would have ultimately paralyzed the whole body and sometimes kill the patient. And it was traced back to the Showa Denko genetically engineered bacteria, and the FDA, instead of pointing out that it was just the Showa Denko brand and that it could have been genetically engineered, when they reported to Congress, they hid the information about the genetic engineering origins of the problem and just blamed it on tryptophan generically, which does not make sense at all, because there were no victims of this new disease called eosinophilia myalgia syndrome who had not taken the Showa Denko variety. And if tryptophan were generically a problem, then you would see an equal portion of people reacting to tryptophan from other companies, not just Showa Denko. So it was a completely, we can say, an engineered attack on tryptophan that happened to correlate with the introduction of Prozac. You see, for an investigative reporter named William Crist, who turned over all of his documents to me before he passed away, and I used that as the basis for a chapter in my book, Seeds of Deception. It's also discussed in my book, Genetic Roulette. There's also a section on our website at responsibletechnology.org that's devoted to his work. His work is actually quoted in the tryptophan section. There was a letter which pointed out that one of the goals of the FDA is to eliminate competition to the prescription drugs, and that the banning of L-tryptophan, according to this research, this investigator, was in part due to this effort to stop the competition to Prozac. And soon after it was banned, and they had actually tried twice before to ban tryptophan, and they were unable, and this outbreak of one brand of L-tryptophan that was leading to this deadly epidemic gave them the excuse to finally ban L-tryptophan, and that led to widespread sales of the pharmaceutical. And it was probably interesting that when that came off of patent, That's when the tryptophan was reintroduced into the market, approved by the FDA again, magically. So it is a tragedy that it was taken off the market. It was a tragedy that the contaminated brand caused this deadly epidemic. And it's an interesting lesson in there. It was killing people and causing harm for approximately 4 years before it was taken off the market. And it almost went completely undetected. It was a series of coincidences, which I describe in the chapter in Seeds of Deception, that allowed doctors to find it. And after 4 years, people think, well, it obviously should have been found because the symptoms were screaming to be discovered. They had the three characteristics simultaneously that are normally needed to identify a culprit. One, that the disease was unique. It was new. And it did not share the symptoms of other diseases, so it stood out. Two, the symptoms were severe, forcing people to go to doctors and hospitals. And three, the symptoms were fast-acting. So it didn't take three generations or 20 years or long-term. So soon after someone had the tryptophan, they got these symptoms. Even with those three in place, it was almost missed. So it begs the question, what about genetically engineered crops? Maybe they're producing not unique symptoms. Maybe they're contributing to cancer or heart disease or diabetes, etc. Maybe they're also producing symptoms that aren't severe, that are basically a mild suppression of our immune system, which can cause us to be susceptible to a wide variety of diseases. Or maybe they're not fast-acting. So hamsters fed genetically modified soybeans in a Russian experiment, by the third generation, most were sterile. They died in infant mortality at four or five times the rate of the controls, and many had birth defects with hair growing in their mouths. But the first generation was fine. So maybe we are not seeing the problems with GMOs because they don't have all three simultaneous characteristics, and they're also so vastly distributed in the food supply that it would be hard to find in any case. And so there's no post-marketing surveillance, no human clinical trials. Approvals are based on assumptions, most of which have been proven untrue. And we're in a very dangerous situation where we're feeding the entire population these genetically engineered foods and releasing them into the environment where they can cross-pollinate and be the background genetic pool of all future generations. So it's a very, very serious thing. And now, if you're ready, we're going to talk to of the good news as to how we can uproot the genetically engineered problem. Are we ready?
Yes, we're ready. And I wanted to just say thank you for the amazing job you did with that section in your book. And there's some great information on your website as well. And it's very fascinating because prior to the ban, tryptophan was prescribed by psychiatrists to their patients. So it was widely used. It was very safe and it had great results. So it's very interesting for you to have shared all of this, and it's wonderful that he was a reporter, shared all that information with you. That's just fabulous that this information is out there. So
it was the best in the world. There was no one that had more information on tryptophan than he, and so we took it, we published exactly what he wrote, and then I also used it as part of my story. I write in a story format in Seeds of Deception, so it's more interesting than a scientific presentation.
Yes.
So, are we ready?
Are we ready? Yes.
People are like, well, tell me some good news, please.
Yes.
I'm going to be nervous all night. All right. So, it turns out that unlike so many huge problems that we face, the GMO issue is solvable and on the level of human choice, on the level of individual consumer choice. What happened in Europe in 1999 was very telling. On February 16th, a gag order was lifted on a scientist. Now, he had been given $3 million to figure out how to test for the safety of GMOs, and his protocols were supposed to be used in Europe for testing all GMOs for safety. He was a pro-GMO scientist, but he discovered quite accidentally and to his surprise that GMOs were very dangerous and caused massive damage to the rats in just 10 days that he was feeding. And moreover, that according to his research, it wasn't the particular gene that was inserted, it was the generic process of genetic engineering that caused the potentially precancerous cell growth, the smaller brains, livers, and testicles, the partial atrophy of the liver, and the damaged immune system. He was gagged and fired after 35 years. He's the top scientist in the world in his field because he discovered problems. And when his gag order was lifted on the 16th of February, it let off a firestorm of press coverage in Europe, but not in the United States. Within a month, 700 articles or more were written in the UK alone, and within 10 weeks, the tipping point of consumer rejection was achieved. And it was a specific day, April 27th, 1999, and it was Unilever, Britain's largest food maker, that led the charge. They declared they were never going to use GMO ingredients again in Europe, and the next day Nestle said it, and the next week virtually everyone else said it. So it was an avalanche of food companies responding to consumer concerns and demands. Now in the United States, we saw a tipping point against genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. Monsanto introduced this genetically engineered drug for cows, and it affects the milk supply. It increases, it has so much increase of a cancer-promoting hormone called IGF-1 that a former Monsanto scientist admitted that three of his colleagues who did safety studies on the milk refused to drink milk thereafter unless it was organic. One bought his own cow. So it's already been banned in most industrialized countries, but now because of a consumer tipping point based on education, it's banned in Walmart and Starbucks and Yoplait and Danone and most American dairies. So it was, again, a tipping point. We saw a tipping point against GMOs in the natural products industry last year, 2013. It became a clear marketing liability. Thousands of products were introduced to the non-GMO project to get verified, and that is now handled. It's being sorted out. If you go to a natural product store, you'll find so many varieties of non-GMO products labeled as such. Now in January this year, Cheerios, then Grape Nuts, now others have named themselves non-GMO in conventional supermarkets. And we are waiting to see the change, the increase in market share of the non-GMO products, which will instigate a tipping point throughout the food industry. Because if they realize that the non-GMO trend is not firewalled behind the walls of Whole Foods, etc., but if it can include shoppers at Walmart and Safeway and Kroger's, then they realize they better go non-GMO before their competitor does and steals their market share. Now, the non-GMO trend has been quantified. The number of Americans who say they're avoiding or reducing GMOs went from about 15% in 2007 to 40% in 2014. The non-GMO labeled products are the fastest growing new label in the United States and have been for years. There's over $5 billion in sales. The increase in sales of that category has outpaced all other health or wellness claims in 2002 and all but one in 2012 and all but one in 2013. And there's so many signs of a coming tipping point. So we invite people to participate in that tipping point, and here are ways to do it. First, by all means, avoid eating GMOs. Go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com, become familiar with how to avoid GMOs. Two, you can subscribe to our newsletter at responsibletechnology.org, and we will keep people informed of actions they can take, petitions they can sign, etc., to keep informed and to help help our work. We actually have a master plan to eliminate GMOs not only in the food supply but in animal feed within 5 years that we're raising money for. So a third way that people could help is to make a donation to the Institute. We're a nonprofit, and you go to responsibletechnology.org and click the donation tab, and a repeating donation each month would be even better because then we can confidently hire the staff we need and the production materials that we need to produce to drive the Walmart shoppers and the Safeway shoppers, et cetera, to non-GMO choices. And we know exactly who we need to approach, how to say it, what to say, and what to do. It's just a matter of getting the resources to do it. And finally, for those that want to be more active in getting the word out, we have a speaker training available online. It's a 7-hour course. We have a tipping point network of activists around North America, about 10,000 of them, and sometimes they meet once a week, sometimes they meet once a month, sometimes they meet per campaign. All of that's available to people on our website at responsibletechnology.org. And for those who have already decided that they need to try to convince their loved ones to avoid eating GMOs based on this discussion or what they've learned already, the tool that we have found to be most effective at converting someone to a non-GMO diet is the film we produced and directed in 2012 called Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives. We did tests on it, and we find that the number of people that decide to change their diet even before the end of the film is remarkably high, and it's the quickest way to get loved ones on board to avoid GMOs with you.
Fantastic. What a great high note to end on. And I want to just say that I encourage everyone to, you know, do this. This is fantastic, certainly for your health and then for the health of your kids and the rest of the world. And then I also wanted to say that Jeffrey is offering a free 7-day viewing of your film, Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives. And the link for that will be on the replay page when you listen to this audio interview. So thank you so much for offering that. And I think it's a wonderful tool to show people so they can be convinced and they can realize how important this is and why we've got to stop it.
Great. Excellent.
Thank you. Thanks so much for everything that you do and everything that you've been doing over the last many years and what you're currently doing. And thank you so much for joining us on the Anxiety Summit and sharing this information here. I think it's been a wealth of information and very, very applicable to people with all health concerns and particularly those with anxiety and depression. Thanks, Jeffrey.
My pleasure. Safe eating, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for joining us for yet another amazing interview on the Anxiety Summit. Join us for some other great interviews. This is Trudy Scott signing off.